I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, a 13-year-old spelling bee contestant hopes a big win will bring his parents back. But first, on Monday, opening arguments began in the trial of Jose Padilla. He's accused of being part of a terrorism support network in Miami. This follows the arrest last week of six men in New Jersey. The FBI says they were planning an attack on soldiers at Fort Dix. Jose Padilla, of course, is an American citizen. The six men arrested last week were all immigrants, but they had all lived in the U.S. for years. Both stories raise the question of why people who have lived in this country for years might want to attack it. The FBI wants to know, too. To find out, they've been forming new relationships within the Muslim American community. John Miller, Assistant Director of Public Affairs at the FBI, joins us from his office in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
And in the interest of full disclosure, I should mention that you and I are former colleagues from ABC News.
That's right.
Okay. Now, you just testified before the Senate's Homeland Security Committee, and you mentioned that just when the affidavit in the Fort Dix case was unsealed, that the FBI initiated a conference call with Muslim leaders in the U.S., even before the media was notified. Why did you guys do that?
You know, that is the new normal. We began doing that after, I believe it was the Miami case, when some of the key national leaders of the most important Arab-American Muslim groups across the country came to us and said, you don't understand the effect that these cases have on our community and our organizations. When the news breaks, the phone starts ringing, people in the community have questions, they've heard rumors, they've heard snippets of news reports, and it would be very helpful if we would be able to tell them, this is what this is about, this is what it's not about, this is the scope of it. And I immediately offered to begin giving them these briefings as soon as we could after a case breaks, because if they get the right message out for their communities, it works for their organizations, but it also works for the FBI.
How does it work for the FBI?
I think the community looks upon the major groups, whether it's ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America, MPAC, the Muslim Public Affairs Council, or any of the other groups, ADC, as trusted agents, and the fact that that they talk to us and we talk to them certainly brings the FBI into a better light in a community where, I think, to start this conversation, we have to admit there's a good degree of suspicion and discomfort.
How did you start the conversation, these kinds of conversations?
Well, on a pretty rocky path, I would have to say. We began our contact with the Arab American and Muslim community in particular in December of 2005. And at the time we launched this effort, a story broke, a very controversial story about whether or not the FBI worked with other agencies to do radioactive monitoring in and around Muslim neighborhoods and businesses. You know, the first rule of this stuff, Michelle, is you try not to develop relationships under high-stress circumstances. You want to develop those relationships when things are very calm.
I'm sorry, John, was the story true?
There were elements of the story that were based in fact, and what we did is we sat those groups down and tried to kind of put it in perspective and give them that information so we could figure out what was rumor and what was fact within the story. And it was a difficult way to start the relationship. But on the other hand, you could take the other view that it gave it a jump start because we began our dialogue in a high-tension way, and everything that followed was necessarily easier.
We're talking to John Miller. He's the FBI's Assistant Director of Public Affairs. John, you're saying that this has been standard practice since about December of 2005. Why do you think it took that long?
This was a responsibility that moved around in the FBI in the period after 9/11. In December of 2005, I asked that the community relations unit at FBI headquarters be able to take this operation over. The people in community relations unit had a background and training in community outreach, not as criminal investigators, not as counterterrorism operators. So they were able to do this with a little more professionalism and acumen because that was their field.
Are there any other groups with whom you have these kinds of relationships?
Oh, through the community outreach unit, we're in the midst of some major meetings with African-American ministers on the eastern seaboard right now. We deal with the Hispanic community. But I put the outreach to Arab-American and Muslim groups as a top priority because I think you have to focus your efforts where the gaps in trust are the widest, and that is certainly identified there.
There's a discussion right now in some urban communities that have been plagued by violence of various sorts, whether it's driven by drugs or guns or whatever, about snitching. Right. And even law-abiding citizens sometimes have a distaste for people who are perceived as being too close to the authorities. Is there ever any concern that your relationships might marginalize people, marginalize them in their standing in the community, and that at the time when you need them most, when there is a crisis, that they won't be perceived as authentic because of their relationships with you?
Well, we're not talking about snitching here. Snitching is when, you know, your friend steals a piece of candy in the deli and, you know, you run and tell their teacher about it or something. When someone identifies an individual or a group of people who are going to commit mass murder, the person who holds back that information becomes complicit if they know that information, and innocent people are going to die. And nobody wants to be complicit in that. The one thing among the many contentious issues that we've talked to our community outreach groups about that everybody agrees on is that none of those groups, while they may differ on issues of politics, none of them say they support terrorism or violence in the United States that will hurt or kill innocent people.
John Miller, Assistant Director of Public Affairs at the FBI. He joined us from his office. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Michelle. It's good to talk to you.
And we turn now to Imam Mohammed Masjid Ali. He is the Vice President of the Islamic Society of North America, one of the FBI's main contacts in the Muslim community. Mohammed Masjid Ali joins us from his office in Sterling, Virginia. Imam, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
You heard my conversation with John Miller. How was that relationship initiated with you? Did someone call you up out of the blue and say, I want to come by and see you?
We have been called by the FBI national office as well as field office to join this meeting, regular meeting, in the field office in Washington, D.C.,
and this was after September 11th, yes?
After September 11th, yes.
Now, everybody might not be pleased to get a phone call from the FBI, especially at a time of such national anxiety. How did you feel?
Actually, some community have concerns, members of the community, and come and ask questions, the nature of the relationship with the FBI, and we have explained to them this is a two-way street. We are here to protect the country we live in. We make sure that our religion not be hijacked by extremists, and we would like to send a message to everyone that our community will not tolerate anyone who would like to infiltrate the community or misuse our resources to do harm to this country.
On the other side of it,
a civil rights issue. Every time there's an incident take place, there's a backlash on Muslims, mm-hmm. whether some people have lost their job or some people been harassed and so forth. And we bring this issue to the FBI in the issue of hate crime and civil rights issue.
You are in a position to raise your concerns.
Yes. For example, our mosque was vandalized twice. And the FBI was able to really to take that case twice very seriously. And they found the people who have vandalized the mosque.
Is there ever a conflict between your pastoral responsibilities and the expectations or the interest that the FBI has in information? For example, let's say there's a father who comes to you. He's worried that his son is perhaps hanging out with the wrong people or is espousing ideas that are of concern to him. And he's coming to you in part of for pastoral care from you. And that's exactly the kind of thing that the FBI would be interested in, wouldn't you think? So how do you handle a conflict like that?
Yeah, the two aspects to this. One is me as an imam, a religious leader, I have to create a condition in my mosque where the tolerance and the respect and the understanding of the others has to be at the top priority of our teaching in the mosque. Number two, that it's very important for us to offer counseling to the individuals in the community who have psychological, emotional trouble. Someone might have seen something taking place in Iraq and get upset about it. Then we have to assist and make an assessment. Is this a psychological, emotional, troubled person? Or if a person part of a group, they mean harm to this country and about to commit a crime, it is an obligation, a responsibility, even for a father, to really to tell the law enforcement about it. You can see the issue of Virginia Tech, for example. if that young man who is a member of my committee and come to me and says, I'm about to go and shoot some students, I would have to take that very serious. You know, and I do believe that any responsible citizen should take that very serious.
The FBI has not always had the best reputation among some communities in this country. Sometimes their own behavior with minority communities in the U.S. has been questioned. And I just wondered if that is also part of the skepticism that some members may have about the agency.
Of course, that's why we need a dialogue. If somebody will be interviewed by an FBI agent and the FBI agent misbehaves a member of my community or threaten them or then anything out of the law, that person have a trust, can walk to my office and says, since you are a member of this advisory committee, I want you to report this case. And I will bring that case before the FBI. That is why we have this relationship. What we would like to see happening here in this relationship, not to repeat mistakes have done in the civil rights movement, for example, where there was report that some people being mistreated and so forth by law enforcement. We would like to make sure this is really happening in daylight, nothing that we can hide from our community. And we would like to be proud of relationship of partnership. And I would like to see my community being treated as partner, not as suspects. We are partnering in this issue of fighting terrorism and extremism.
Imam Muhammad Masjid Ali, he is Vice President of the Islamic Society of North America. He joined us from his office. Imam, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.